Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Android Central Podcast. This is Tony, Corey's wingman, and it's time to make the donuts. So sit back and relax as you enjoy your special guests on this week's edition of Android Central. Take care.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It's episode number 55 for Thursday, April 7th, 2011. You know why I say 55 like that?
No, but I hope you tell me.
I got Sammy Hagar stuck in my head, and you know how he is. $5 says most of the people listening to this are too young for that. Chat room, do you guys even know who Sammy Hagar is? Yes? No? David Lee Roth?
He's David Lee Roth's little brother, right?
So welcome to the Android Central Podcast. I am Phil Nickinson. I am the editor of AndroidCentral.com and the host of this little thing that we do every Thursday night live. For what time is it? 9 p.m. Eastern and other times in other parts of the world. And our ever-revolving cast of characters, we have Jerry Hildenbrand from the site.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
And we got Mickey Papillon, a.k.a. the Cell Phone Junkie and thecellphonejunkie.com.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be back.
And we got Chris Parsons, a.k.a. Blaze from the forums and the site and everywhere, right?
I'm all over the place. How's everybody doing?
Are there any sites you don't write for?
Any
of the smartphone expert sites? No? Hey, I did a pre-central post.
I have my name on all of them. At least one.
I did a pre-central post today. I was very proud of myself.
I've seen that.
It's always dangerous.
They judged you in the comments.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, God, I didn't screw it up too bad. I screwed it up a little bit, but... So let's do a podcast, shall we? We've got a lot to talk about. I know Jerry's a little hot under the collar about a couple things. We got a little bit from last week to pick up from. Mickey, it's been a while since we've talked to you. It's good to have you back.
Well, you know, it was CTIA, and, well, you took a vacation, and, well, I've been working. So, you know, about a month, but a couple devices since then, played with the Zoom. I think I may have talked about the Zoom on the last show I was on, but Thunderbolt as well. I know we'll get to it, but either way. I'm good to be back.
Well, let's talk about Thunderbolt for a minute, because I promised last week we'd talk about it this week, and let's talk about it this week. Yeah, it's here, and I like it a lot. Review is coming, I promise. The only problem I have with it is with LTE data, and I love the LTE data. It is so fast, it is so good, but damn, it kills the battery. It just sucks it dry, I think. I went through like 6 hours, you know, maybe on the outside at CTIA. And granted, like, a show is not a good place to test battery, but still, it should last longer than 6 hours.
Let me ask you this, because I had very, very similar experience where, especially at the beginning, because I think if I remember correctly, you got yours and went to CTIA like a day later or something, right?
Yeah, Dieter picked it up in Miami and brought it up. So yeah.
So one of the things that I noticed is there's always a certain amount of, let's just call it break-in time for batteries, mm-hmm. and the Thunderbolt is no exception. And what I did find is that over time, I mean, you use it so much at the beginning, obviously getting it set up and playing with it and doing all sorts of different things. But when you really slide into your daily routine, I felt like it got to the point where it was acceptable. It's still going to be a you charge it every night device, and really, depending on your usage, you may find yourself charging it during the day, but it's kind of like just having the Wi-Fi connected all the time is really what it feels like. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't do anything on the phone, and it drops probably without even doing anything 5% an hour.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, something like that. So you go to bed, you wake up in the morning, and you're 30% without even thinking about it. You know, and but over time, like I said, I think that it starts to get better. And by the end of the period that I had it, I was actually not that upset with it. I mean, I was charging it once a day, you know, but the first day I got it, it was 3 times in a day. But I was using the heck out of it.
And talking to HTC about it, I mean, I flat out asked them, like, look, guys, are we experiencing the same kind of growing pains we had with the Evo? I know it's, you know, WiMAX is a slightly different technology. But, you know, it was the same thing, right? We all got WiMAX and holy crap, we have to charge this thing every night. Now, charge your phone every night, people. It's not that tough. You're sleeping. Take your man pill, charge your phone. But, you know, B, it's going to get better. And like you said, once the battery breaks in a little bit, it'll get a little better. You know, I've got the extended battery here, and I know a lot of people said, it's huge, it's ugly. Well, you know what? All extended batteries are huge and ugly. That's not new. But really, it's not that bad. It adds 1 ounce of weight to the phone. And actually, my fingers fit around it quite nicely. So yeah, I mean, it feels weird and big, but if it means I can walk around a show floor and use the phone all day or travel and not worry about the battery, then I'll absolutely have it with me. As far as like the phone itself, it's a great phone. Really, really like it. I haven't used the front facing camera once, and
no,
I'm not sure I ever will.
No, I always do once to take a sample picture for the review.
Yeah,
you know. But no, it's what would you use it with other than to take a picture?
That's kind of still the big problem, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, Fring's got it. Right? Yeah, Fring got a new beta with a group chat, but at the same time, it's like, when am I gonna? No, it's so few and far between. I mean, I guess it's better to have than not, but still, I don't know. So, is it an Evo? Is it an Evo a year later, or is it better?
Yeah, well, you could say that about pretty much any device that is 4.3 inches from them.
Mm-hmm.
Could you not? You know, I mean, you could say it about what the Inspire. You could. Could say it about, I don't know what else, but there you go.
Somebody's waiting to say something back there. I hear it.
What is it?
I've got the Evo, the Inspire, and the Thunderbolt here side by side, all of them working. And the Thunderbolt, I think this is just my theory, because it's not running the same nuisance that the Inspire is. It does a much better job, you know, going through the operating system. It's more responsive. It seems a little faster. Both are a whole lot faster than a stock Evo, and it's all from the internals. Exterior, yeah, they all really resemble each other. You know, maybe different materials that they're made out of. But you could say, yeah, they're all the Evo for different carriers, but the guts are what matters, and, you know, they are much improved over the Evo.
I still like it.
It's a beautiful phone.
Oh, yeah, it's a great phone. Kickstand, you know, whatever. Use it, you don't. The speaker's pretty good. HTC speakers are still not as loud as I want them to be, though. There's like...
The camera's still...
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
I'm jumping around.
No, the camera...
Camera's weak, right? Okay. I mean, it's still weak HTC camera.
Yeah.
I find all the HTC speakers are pretty weak.
Yeah.
And the camera... on the HTC Desire HD that I got, the camera's pretty weak on that, too.
Yep.
So that's, you know, the Thunderbolt in a nutshell. I would recommend it in a heartbeat. You know, as long as you don't mind a phone of that size, absolutely. You know, you guys on Sprint, you know, you've got the Evo 3D coming, and I will probably very quickly recommend that as well. You know, don't worry about the 3D stuff. I had somebody ask this week, like, you know, what 2D phone can I get? I was like, why? Just get the Evo 3D and don't do 3D stuff on it. It's just fine. I mean, it's a normal screen otherwise. So, for, you know, all intents and purposes, I think.
Hmm.
Anything else on Thunderbolt?
I don't think...
No?
Hmm? Well, let me just say this. I think if anyone is looking at Verizon and seeing the stuff that's going to come out, you know, over the next couple of months and debating whether or not to go with something, you know, wait or go with the Thunderbolt, I was a pretty big... I was pretty down on the Thunderbolt when I first heard it announced at CES. I thought... What are they doing? This is like a device from last year that there's no way this is going to appeal to the market that I think they're going after with it. It was totally wrong with it. I think they put together a device that works extremely well with hardware that is familiar yet you know, enhanced. And I would absolutely recommend it without even thinking about it. This is by far the best Android device that I've used, and I would actually, I mean, really, truly happy with it.
Sense hasn't changed that much since a year ago, but I mean, I think they're refining it and it's getting a little better. Mm-hmm. But overall, I mean, it's the same exact experience, right? Mm. You guys,
yeah. I mean, all the new stuff is, well, you know, nothing that's not behind the scenes.
I don't,
the average user, it's going to be the same.
I don't ever use that personalized button that's on the front. So you have that little, it's like a.
That was the first thing I wanted to get rid of.
Yeah, it's like an artist palette in a paintbrush, and I haven't touched it once. I mean, I don't really customize the hell out of my phone, but like I don't need to hit that and then hit another button to add widgets to the home screen. I just hold down on the home screen. Or let's see what else is on here. Wallpaper, again, you know, other places. It's not to say it doesn't look beautiful. They did a really nice job with it, but I never use that. I wonder if I'm the only one.
No, I mean, I would give anything to be able to put, you know, Google Voice in there instead.
Yeah. Oh, I know what I want to ask Mickey about. So, Mickey, you used Winmo way back in the day, and you were probably very familiar with SBB products, so like SBB Mobile Shell. Did you see the new version that just came out for Android, SBB Shell 3D?
Yeah, I did, but I don't know. I feel like that game, you know, that ship has sailed. I don't know. Maybe I'm just have moved on from that thing, because I used to love SPB products and I just didn't.
It's actually it is a very nice launcher for Android. I like it a lot.
Okay.
It's $15.
Okay. It's just overpriced.
It is. What, SPB, bring the price down. I'm telling you right now. You'll sell so many more at $5 than you will at $15. You'll make up the difference.
And or make it free and on every home screen put an ad.
Don't do that. No.
Don't take Jerry's advice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you it looks really good, and I enjoyed, you know, kind of doing an overview of it or at least looking at it, and I thought, well, this is pretty neat, you know. I mean, I appreciate the stuff like the weather thing where it had the little bars on it. I think that's kind of cool, right? But I don't know. For the most part, I looked at it and went, okay, well, it's just flashy, but I don't know.
I would totally use it. I still get it on the Nexus S here. I might well leave it on there. In fact, I might even... Nah, crap! See, I've got the review edition still on there, so it's not even final. But, like, I would go buy it if it was $5. I'm not going to buy it at $15. Can't make me. Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent.
Not going to do it.
All right, so that's it for the Thunderbolt and other stuff, I think. Let's talk tablets for a minute. So I've got the Wi-Fi-only Zoom here. It's exactly like... The carrier version of the Zoom, only without cell data. And, oh, man, so I took my daughter to the doctor today and took the Zoom with me. It's like, damn it, they don't have Wi-Fi there. I don't have a MiFi anymore, so that's my fault. But, yeah, if you have a MiFi, it's a no-brainer. Go get the Wi-Fi-only Zoom. Even though the price needs to come down, it's still $600, just like the other one. The only difference is you don't get a contract and a data plan. So we have that. And then Samsung yesterday announced we're going to have a $350 Galaxy Tab. That's almost too good to pass up, I think. Now, the Galaxy Tab...
If they would have...
Yes.
If they would have done that in November, imagine the same.
Oh, my God, yeah. If it was, you know, 3, 4, 5 months ago, it would have been awesome. It's almost too late now. I mean, it's good for nerds to get. But, you know, I don't want to... I can wait till June, till the 8.9-inch... But again, you're still paying $600 for the big version or $469. You know, $350 is just a great, great price. So my question, and we asked this on the blog today, is would you get a $250 Nook Color or a $350 Galaxy Tab Wi-Fi only? Go around the table.
Nook.
Nook? Really?
Nook.
Yeah. But Why? That's because I don't mind fooling with it.
Yeah, I would...
You know, go ahead, Mickey.
I would take the Tab because I don't want to mess with it. You know, I don't want to have to deal with it. I like the Tab. I thought it was a great size. Mm-hmm. I would have a hard time doing Wi-Fi only with it. But then again, if you're, you know, if you can get something like a MiFi or you've got an Android handset that's got tethering built in or some other means, then you're probably okay with that. And I mean, I saw that and I said, maybe. But then I also think, well, that's old. I always see these deals on things, and I'm like, oh, I need to get that. I don't know. You know, it's 6 months old now. I mean, I don't know. I in my mind, it's like someone playing a game of tennis with Android tablets back and forth because there's just so many now. I don't know what to choose.
I think I'm going to get one. For $350? Yeah. Yeah. Like, I might actually buy one. My wife loved the size. I love the size. I love the Nook Color. It's a great e-reader. But if I can get a full-fledged tablet that also does all the e-reader stuff for $350, I know it's not dual-core, I know it doesn't have Honeycomb, and you know what? I'm not entirely convinced the Galaxy Tab will officially get Honeycomb. But for just like a basic tablet that can do, you know, a whole lot of stuff, you know, just not the hardcore gaming, sweet price. says me.
Are you okay with the size, the 16 gigs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's fine. Especially now that we have the Amazon cloud streaming. I paid $100. I had to get the more storage. It's a lot of money for a lot of storage, I guess. But my upload finally finished. Only took like 4 days. 70-something gigs. But it's all there. And I haven't used it once.
No. And I mean, what? Okay, I get why it's kind of cool to have that, but...
yeah, it's...
You know, I still feel like, why... I mean, are you not a fan of Slacker or Pandora?
Absolutely, what I do you need? I love Slacker.
I know, I do too. I gave up on my... I've got... My music collection is ridiculous. It's over 200 gigs. Ooh. I don't know what I'm doing. It's like 150,000 songs or some stupid thing. I don't ever listen to it. I always stream stuff because I never want to deal with trying to search through stuff. I want to listen to a specific genre or state, you know, song. I type it in and it streams everything that's similar to it. It's perfect. But I can see where people would like it because then they wouldn't have to store everything on there. And I get that. But, you know, what happens when you're on the plane? You know, I mean, you still got to, you're well, I'll just sync over some music. Well, what did you have? What'd you buy the $100 thing for then? You know?
Because I had to. I had to upload all my music. Don't ask why.
Because you're Phil.
I just had to do it.
And it's Android.
Couldn't help myself.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I know.
I was just enjoying Mickey having a little rant.
Well, I mean.
No, he's absolutely
right. You know what it is? You know what this is? This streaming thing is the same as Mobile Me for Apple.
Oh.
Who needs Mobile Me? What's wrong with Gmail? Why can't you know, well, I get the thing. I get a site. What do you need to pay for a site for? Well, what does Find My iPhone? Well, you can get that for free. Like it doesn't make any sense. And that's kind of where I'm going. It's kind of cool that you can, and it's really tightly integrated, but I'm still, I don't know. I feel like with the options that are out there now, having all of your own music there, unless you are really just a huge audiophile. And I, you know what? I know you are very big into music, Phil. So maybe I can give you a hall pass on this one. But I think for most people, even if it's just the 5 gig option, you can put up there the current stuff that you're listening to. You can always delete and add new stuff. You don't have to have your whole music collection up there all the time for the average person, right? So this is what I'm going after. I'm not saying that it's a bad decision. I'm just saying the average person has probably got some other options, or at least they figured out other options until now. But this is also a line of thinking that may be completely flawed after, you know, using it or, you know, trying it out for a while. I mean, I tried it out too, and I was like, ah, look at that. It works. Right on. Okay. You know, whatever.
If I had had, like, if I wasn't being so impatient about it, I probably would have just, like, uploaded stuff that I wanted to listen to. Because, like, I've got all my wife's stuff on here, too, and I don't really need to upload Madonna. Not that that's what she listens
to
all the time.
Right?
But it's in there. Oh, yeah, no, everything was uploaded. You know, all of Mia's music that's on here as well. So, I don't know. I did it because I had to.
Wonderful.
I couldn't stop myself.
In 4 days of having help. Crummy internet because you've had a straight upload maxing out your bandwidth the whole time?
Yes. I get really good bandwidth here, though. But, yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, 70 gigs, man.
Let me talk about the docks. So I've got both docks here. I've got the just normal desktop dock, and then I've got the speaker dock. Motorola was smart, so I was like, well, maybe I can just tell people just to get the speaker dock. And then you don't need the regular dock. But they did a difference. So the speaker dock has HDMI out. The regular dock has an aux out for audio, but the speaker dock doesn't. So
what?
Yeah.
The speaker dock has no auxiliary output?
No. It's got HDMI.
What? What? But who has HDMI speakers?
Exactly.
That's kind of, I don't know. Okay. I see your point. I just am still trying to digest that.
Yeah. It was smart, but, you know. What else? I like the Zoom. I like it, but I'm still interested in the new stuff that's coming. All right. I don't want to talk about the Zoom anymore. We've talked about it all the time. Let's talk about...
How heavy it is.
I hear that.
You hear that? That's Dieter calling me.
Does he not know you're in a podcast? Seriously. No,
let's tell him.
Answer it.
Hey, you want to be on the podcast?
We're all being very quiet trying to hear what Dieter said.
I know. I almost heard him say something like, what is the difference between, and then I couldn't understand what he was saying. Obviously something important if he's keeping him on the phone when he's in a podcast.
Yep.
Cool. I'm going to get back. We're actually live right now, so they can hear me. Yeah. No worries. No, they're all straining trying to hear you through the speaker or something. I'm like, I'm not on speakerphone. No, I'll give you a call when we're done. Hey, let's do a podcast again, shall we?
All right, so the Zoom is the Zoom is heavy, and that's that.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, so let's talk about kind of the big elephant in the room, and I know Jerry really wants to talk about this, and I'm going to make Jerry explain it. So Andy Rubin, you know, the godfather of Android, this is his deal. He did exactly what we asked him to last week on the podcast, which is came out and did
a
podcast.
No, he didn't.
Oh, hang on. Let me set the stage. He basically explained himself, you know, and what's not himself, but where Android is right now and what's going on and whether Honeycomb's going to be open source and blah, 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 and kind of kind of addressed things. Was it Business Week or whoever did that story last week? So take it away, Jerry.
Well, he took I counted them, 461 words to say, it's still open, but we're not going to give it to you until we're ready to give it to you. And, you know, my biggest problem is if the source code isn't ready, how can the final product be ready? You're charging people to buy it. You're telling those people it's open source, but you're going to wait until it's ready to make it open source. I understand a lot of people don't think like I do. But you cannot have both. If you want to have control, I respect that. But do not maintain control, keep it to yourself, and then turn around and try to appease people like me and tell me that it's open source, but you're not going to get it until I'm ready to give it to you. You know, I'm going to try. I got a plumber coming tomorrow. I'm going to try telling him I'll pay you when I'm ready and see if he'll buy that. You know, when it's ready is not an answer. When it's ready is, you know, if it wasn't ready, why ship the product? And it just infuriates me, especially after playing with the Zoom for a week. Man, if we had the source code, so much more could be done with that thing. The memory management needs fixed. There's the whole deal with the SD card. You know, you've got potentially 200,000 people out there that would, you know, be able to assist in fixing that. And that's just not how, you know, when it's ready is not how open source works. And Andy Rubin knows that. And he just, you know, he said something just to try to get people off his back, and it's not going to work for me. And I did that without yelling.
You know, Good job, Jerry.
Well, let me ask you this, because I mean, I look at the entire situation, and I'm happy with it. And I know I'm, you know, kind of in a different position than you are, Jerry. But when I think about the number of devices that are out there for Android right now and where they've the path that they've gone down, there was going to have to be a point at some juncture where they said, we need to scale this back. We need to figure out where we really need to be going. And in the past, really, it's been we can just have only certain devices accessing the Android market, right? Do I understand that correctly?
I think so. You know, they never came out and said that, but I think you're right.
Right, because I mean, I heard there were some that didn't get access to it, and that was. But now you've got this whole other market that's popped up, right?
So right.
You now have for everything that Amazon will not be, it still is going to have an impact on it. And so I think I'm wondering if that was the point where they just said, all right, this is it. We need to now move forward and say, we're only going to be able to control so much. And if we can't do it, if we're not going to do it now, we're never going to do it. So let's step back from this one and make sure that we're going in the right direction. And I don't have a problem with it because I'm more concerned about the actual devices and really having that experience with the devices be a positive one. And when you have so much out there that's not in being created, that doesn't provide a good experience to the user, I don't think it's in the spirit of what Google wanted with the OS.
And Mickey, I agree with you completely. I do not want Google to just lay back and let people do whatever they want. But if you're going to take and if Google's going to do that in our best interest, I will agree that's in our best interest. They still need to, Chrome is a great example. You have the Chrome browser and Chromium, the open source side. Give us what you have. Let the people that want it and believe like I do that open means open, let us have it. Tell manufacturers, look, if you do something stupid like put this on your device, you'll never see Google Talk. You'll never see the market. You'll never see any support from us. If you want that kind of support from us, this is the build you need to work with, and we're going to maintain control over it. Nothing wrong with that to me. But don't tell me it's open and then tell me I can't use Andy Rubin's tweet that he defines open and gives me the instructions to go download it and build it. If that's what open means, then why can't I do it? And you tell me it's open.
Do you find that there's going to be a time when we're able to, when they're going to be able to figure that out? Or do you think this is, that's kind of where I see them going, is they're going to have a solution to this issue. They're not going to ultimately block everything forever, but I don't know. I guess I'm not so sure I quite understand how they're going to take this into the future yet.
Right. Maybe, and I don't think they do.
Okay. All right.
Realistically, we couldn't live with the Galaxy Tab through as it stands, the one that we first saw in August. Just the platform couldn't handle that being the only tablet until, whenever it's going to be ready. What, June, maybe, they'll release the code? I'm pulling that out of my ass. I don't know. But, probably a couple more months, I would think. And not with the iPad 2 coming out. Absolutely not. Not with the Playbook. The Playbook's going to be out in 10 days. We still have a couple months for the for the webOS touchpad, but I'm sorry. The as good as the Galaxy Tab is, and I know we just talked a lot of nice things about it, but that cannot be your flagship tablet as you're running into the iPad 2 launch. They had to get something out, and I agree with Jerry. I absolutely do. But as a platform, as a business, you couldn't just sit back and have nothing.
Well, I'm still convinced that, when Bloomberg first reported this, they kind of hinted at some of the things, they were hearing from some of the manufacturers that Google says they're never going to open source Honeycomb and they're going to wait for the next version. That's the part that bothers me most of all. If they have no plans to ever open source it, to come up and say, well, here's version 3.2, it's open source. That means version 3.0 is not open source, never was. But yet you told me it was.
Right. I'm sorry, Jerry.
Well, so I wish the people that wrote SQLite or the original developers of WebKit had used the GPL. Then we wouldn't be in this situation. I wish I could go back in time and say, hey, you're going to develop this database software and it's going to work really, really good. But 10, 20 years from now, people are going to use it and not share your work and give people the credit or give you the credit that you're due by releasing their modifications to your source. But they're still going to use it and say it's open source. Because if it was GPL, we wouldn't have none of this crap.
Do you think it's going to be that much better when we finally do get it?
No.
What do you envision being different?
Hopefully the SD card works and the, you know, I really do think that they're trying to merge phone function into Honeycomb, and that's what they're, you know, going to want to release. But, you know, look at every other release of Android that we've had. You know, 2 weeks later, it's followed up by a .1 release because it wasn't right. That's going to happen. That will happen with open source, because no software is bug free. If it's open, you have a million eyes looking at it, figuring out how to fix it instead of just 10. So you release something a couple weeks later. Here's the improvements. This is how it should have been. Here it is. We're going to see the same thing whenever they do decide to release code. We're not seeing that now because nobody can help.
Man, you're getting yelled at in the comments in the chat room.
I don't care. I don't care. I mean, you know, love it or hate it, I'm allowed to think what I want to think. And, you know, I've been an open source developer for, God, years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as this beard was growing. And, you know, I believe in this stuff. This is more to me than, you know, just a smartphone. I believe in open source. I, you know, when I first heard this whole fiasco, I wanted to take the battery out of my Nexus S, stick it in the drawer, and go buy a Mego phone.
So the non-nerds, you know, out there, tell them what Mego is.
Mego is a completely open source operating system for a phone that I can download the code, make changes while they're working on it, and submit my changes back. It's like Firefox.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's community-driven and corporate-driven, and it's not as good as Android. I'll say that right up front. But, you know, it's open.
What if they were to do some sort of certification process, you know, something where they're it's open, but for the consumer side, they make it so that it's like, you know, the Thunderbolt certified by Google, you know, or put by Google on it or something like that. I'm wondering how much of the consumer experience is factoring into this decision. What do you think?
A lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
totally.
So take that aspect, you know, or that into perspective and think, well, how can they be okay with both sides of this coin, where they're keeping it open for Jerry, but they're making it clear for Mickey that this is an operating system that we've spent a lot of time on. We are excited about allowing people to be able to do the things that they want to with it, but we want everyone to know that if you want a piece of hardware that we know is going to function very well with it, we're going to put our name behind it. I mean, this is kind of where I'm thinking this could be going is they're just trying to figure out something that they can do, and they had to stop it at some juncture, and that's where we're at today.
I love that idea, Mickey.
Yeah.
But the problem there means that, you know, we can't get the Zoom out of the door before the iPad 2.
Mm. That is very true, isn't it? I mean, you see the pressure from some of the other guys. I mean, gosh, you've got the touchpad, and you've got the playbook here next week, and
yep.
I understand that most of the people who are interested in the Android tablets are going to buy Android tablets, but when the average person is thinking about a tablet, and for some whatever reason they decide not to go with an iPad, which is rare when it comes to tablets these days, they're going to be looking at what's out there. And maybe they've used an Android phone in the past, but let's say they haven't. And how do they choose something? And maybe the Motorola Zoom is fine. They've done a lot of advertising with it, but I don't know. To me, I see the Google name behind it, and I know Google. I search Google at the office, and I, you know what I mean? Like, you're that kind of person where
mm-hmm.
you're comfortable with it. So then I see Google's name behind it, and I'm probably okay with the product, versus I see the playbook, and I go, BlackBerry? Really? I don't want to do that. Maybe it looks kind of cool. Then I see a Google device. Oh yeah, Google. I'll do that. So I'm just making up stuff now. Google certifying devices, as far as I know, starting next week. So it's going to be great.
We'll do some IO predictions.
Sounds like
here.
You're making up stuff, but you know that's kind of the way that it looks like it's going to go, or should be at this point. Because I pretty much agree with everything that you said there. So
yep.
You know, if they did that, cool. I'd be all for it.
And I'm sure that that's part of their plan. You know, I don't see how they can have any other plan if they want to try to continue to advance the platform and make money on it. You know, we can't forget that Google's main goal is to make money.
Which is through the ads, though.
Right.
Through the search.
But they have to put the product in people's hands to get people to use the product and look at the ads. So they have to make it appeal to the consumer. And I have no problem, you know, just let people like me have something. Let me unlock. Why give me a Zoom with an unlockable bootloader and not give me the damn source code? I don't know. I you know what? I need a drink.
We'll do some Google I/O predictions here ahead of the developer conference, which is a little more than a month away. But Jerry, do you think we're going to have the source code by I/O?
I don't think we're going to have the source code until we see whatever we're going to call ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that source that Bloomberg talked to, the reason I believe it is because everybody at Google pretends like it was never said.
Sure.
So that's what I think is going to happen.
Well, and Honeycomb, no, it's that big a surprise to us, right? I mean, we all kind of knew that.
Right.
That there was this up or down vote by somebody who said, no, sorry, your little craplet's not good enough to have, you know, Google Apps on it. And I really don't have a problem with that. I mean, I do on principle, and that's where I think the two-track fragmentation, you know, is a good thing. But at least be honest and be open about it.
Right.
And, you know, they kind of hide behind, well, here are criteria, and there are links in Andy Rubin's blog post. Should we just read Andy Rubin's whole thing? You want to do that?
I guess if you want to, make sure everybody knows what we're talking about.
So there's a number of paragraphs we can switch off if you'd like. You know, like when you're in grade school, you go around the room, everyone reads a paragraph. So it's called, I think I'm having a Gene Omdahl moment. Now, someone's got to explain that because I don't quite get that.
That is the man who coined the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, or FUD. He's the one who coined that phrase.
Okay, anyway. So he starts off, he says, recently there's been a lot of misinformation in the press about Android and Google's role in supporting the ecosystem. I'm writing in the spirit of transparency and in an attempt to set the record straight. The Android community has grown tremendously since the launch of the first Android device in October of 2008. But I thought throughout we've remained committed to fostering the development of an open platform and the mobile industry and beyond.
Any problems there? Are we good?
I think that's good.
No, they gave us what we wanted, basically, from... Mm-hmm. Last week, we wanted them to speak on it, so.
So that's what he's doing. All right, I'll take the next one. We don't believe in a one-size-fits-all solution. The Android platform has already spurred the development of hundreds of different types of devices, many of which were not originally contemplated when the platform was first created. Now, I'm going to stop there because think back to way once upon a time, the original Android developer device that, you know, we all saw leaked looked like the HTC Snap, which was a Winmo device. It had big round buttons, a little like 3.2-inch screen, kind of like the old Moto Q devices, but with a much better keyboard. So, I mean, I think that's what he's talking about there. And obviously, you know, phones have surpassed everything we all kind of thought they could be. He continues, what amazes me is that even though the quantity and breadth of Android products being built has grown tremendously, it's clear that quality and consistency continue to be top priorities. I think that means, damn, we've seen a lot of crap out there with our
That's what they mean. Their priorities are quality and consistency.
Right.
And
yes.
So then you have to keep going to understand why that is their comment.
Miraculously, we are seeing the platform take on new use cases, features, and form factors as it's being introduced in new categories and regions while still remaining consistent and compatible for third-party applications. So, you know, Android in radios, Android in refrigerators.
That's what happens when it's open source. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, there's no way they couldn't have seen that coming.
I've built 15 years ago computers the size of a cigarette pack that ran Linux, you know, embedded. That's part of open source and part of what I want.
As always, device makers are free to modify Android to customize any range of features for Android devices. That's redundantly redundant. This enables device makers to support unique and differentiating functionality of their products. If someone wishes to market a device as Android compatible or include Google applications on the device, we do require the device to conform with some basic compatibility requirements. And they give you a link where you might or might not understand all of those. parenthetical, after all, it would not be realistic to expect Google applications or any applications for that matter to operate flawlessly across incompatible devices. That's an interesting thing. All right, so that kind of gets us back to the whole, are we screwed because we don't have just one device like Apple's done? And I think everyone will agree when you have one device and one device only, or one device and a couple legacy devices that are really, really similar. You make things a lot easier on yourself.
Make things a lot easier, but then some choice goes away because if that one particular device doesn't fit somebody's personality or whatever the case may be, then they're obviously not purchasing your device because it doesn't fit their needs.
Right. A phone is a very personal item. To a lot of people, it's, an expression of themselves. Let's be honest. That's why pink Motorola Razors sold so well.
Yeah. In order to sell the products and get Android out there, they need to have different devices, every possible screen resolution, whatever the case may be. There needs to be more than just one standard device or one variation of a device in order to get it out there. Apple's done well, but, they've made variations throughout their timeline as well to keep up with it and give people a different bit of a choice. But, essentially it's still the same thing, but Android has gone ahead and they've given everybody a device, no matter what kind of form factor you want, color, chances are you're going to find it on the Android platform. So.
Right.
Our, quote, anti-fragmentation program has been in place since Android 1.0 and remains a priority for us to provide a great user experience for consumers and a consistent platform for developers. In fact, all of the founding members of the Open Handset Alliance agreed not to fragment Android when we first announced it in 2007. Our approach remains unchanged. There are no lockdowns or restrictions against customizing UIs. That is
good. Shouldn't be.
Yeah. And I think we've seen that. I think that addresses that there had been rumors that people wouldn't be allowed to skin, to skin Honeycomb, but we've already seen they are, so that's just fine.
Question the anti-fragmentation program though a little bit because, like they said, it's been in place since Android 1.0, but the previous comments to that say that they're now seeing Android in different variations and such. They never even expected it to, so.
No. I don't think we're talking fragmentation in the same sense, and I think Jerry can probably help me explain it a little better. We're not talking about little tweaks. We're not talking about skins that, that cause upgrades to take longer. They're talking about seriously forking the project.
Yeah,
And I say forking not like so I don't drop an F-bomb. I mean forking like a whole other code base branched off of.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. So it's bigger than that.
Like they had to do for the Zoom, and now they're trying to fix.
Exactly. There are not and never have been any efforts to standardize the platform on any single chipset architecture. There had been rumors that they were going to try to make it all so it was like ARM, whatever, I forget. Mm-hmm. And don't worry about that. Finally, we continue to be an open source platform and will continue releasing source code when it is ready. As I write this, the Android team is still hard at work to bring all the new Honeycomb features to phones. As soon as this work is completed, we'll publish the code. I mean, there it is right there, right? As soon as they get it back to where it can run on phones in some form, they'll publish the code. So, look, he's being honest about it there, right? We don't know when, but at least they're giving us something. This temporary delay does not represent a change in strategy. We remain firmly committed to providing Android as an open source platform across many device types.
Okay.
The volume and variety of Android devices.
Okay.
The volume and variety of Android devices in the market continues to exceed even our most optimistic expectations. We will continue to work toward an open and healthy ecosystem because we truly believe this is the best for the industry and best for our consumers. Do you really think it got ahead of them?
Well, one second. I want to read one other thing that Andy Rubin wrote.
Yes.
So we can take that into, you know, consideration here as well. On the 19th of October, Andy wrote, the definition of open, colon, make directory, that's a Linux command, Android, semicolon, CD Android, semicolon, repo init-u, git, colon, / android.git.kernel.org/platform/manifest.git, semicolon, repo sync, semicolon, make. If that's the definition of open, that needs to give me Honeycomb, which, you know, they say is open, and it doesn't.
So sexy when Jerry reads Linux commands.
I know, right?
but that is the core of my whole issue. He tells me that Android is open. Check this out. And then he tells the press and everybody else, well, Android is open, but it's not ready.
Yeah, I bet he wishes he hadn't said that.
I'm sure he does because, you know, I've got it saved in case he deletes it.
Jeez. So that's where we stand. We don't have the code yet. They will put it out at some point. We don't know when. People are
when upset. It's ready.
When it's ready, yes. Read it? Sorry. Some people are more upset than others. Yes. I'm upset about some of it, I guess.
And I understand I'm upset more than most normal people. I've never tried to be normal. I'm just me.
It's not unimportant. It's not unimportant. We talked about it last week. I think Steve Kondik, you know, swallowed the pill like the rest of us are going to have to and said, look, you know, we're going to get a better platform at the end of this. So let's, you know, bitch while we have to and then all hug once we get the source code. Okay. We should totally have sold, like, podcast ads for that movie, by the way. Could have all retired. You want to do some voicemails and emails and kind of wind down and relax a little? And
that'll work.
Yeah.
Get my blood pressure back to normal.
De-stress Jerry here.
Yeah, we do. Not sure these will do it, but we have a shot. All right, so I got a long one and a short one. Which one do you want to do first?
Let's do Tony first.
Ah, Tony, yes. That's actually pronounced Jeff. I was confused for a second.
Hey, it's Jeff from San Diego, and I've been traveling recently using, like, hotel Wi-Fi. And I'm wondering, should I be using a firewall? Is there any security issues I should be worried about with that? Love the podcast and the forums. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much.
That's a good question, because, I mean, we all just connect to Wi-Fi and don't even think about it, right?
Yep.
All right, are there any firewall programs for, you know, smartphones?
Yeah, there's firewalls for Android. I don't think that's the most important consideration. I think, you know, more importance would need stressed on what you send out over an open Wi-Fi network.
Mm-hmm. So, like, when you're on one, don't do your banking information, or...
I wouldn't. I mean, if you need to do that kind of stuff, you know, use a VPN. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can't on the Zoom, and you know, until we get the source code and can fix that.
Stop it.
Okay.
But actually, you think back to, was it the Galaxy Tab, the new ones, or a Galaxy S2, where they stressed the VPN? Might have been the Galaxy S2.
I think so, yeah.
I think it was. So. Actually, yeah, I'm just looking in the market right now and search for firewall, and you have root device. It might all be root devices. So there's some out there. But I would agree. Worry less about firewalls and more, like, just, you know, be careful what you're doing. Don't, like, sit there and save your passwords all in one big text file on your phone while you're on a Wi-Fi.
Right. And you know, I don't want to... people to think, well, that's fine. I can put all sorts of classified information on my phone and nobody be able to get it. But, you know, people aren't looking for Android phones to try to hack in and take your stuff, even though some people would like us to believe they are.
All right. Now let's do the long one. This is from Brian, and this one is actually pronounced Brian and spelled Brian.
Hey, guys, this is Brian calling for the Android Central podcast. I have a quick comment, and I guess I'll throw a kind of question in there. just to hear your thoughts on this. I'm actually a WebOS user, and I've been following all the different phones. I've used Android, I've used Windows, Windows 7, I've used iPhone, and I really like the Android community, the hacking that's done, the rooting, all the customizations that are possible, and that's kind of what I wanted to touch on is to see what your thoughts are on the way that Palm does things. You can root the phone by just typing the Konami code, and it basically just roots it. You can unroot it, root it, you know, with the tap of a button. Now it doesn't even have to restart the phone to do it. That kind of brought to light when I was thinking about that when a couple weeks ago you guys were talking about how some applications got on the market and how they had some viruses in them and stuff. And I just wanted to hear your stand on the way that Palm kind of, you were asking how Android should do it, what's the best way, like how can they avoid that thing, and I didn't hear anyone mention how Palm has a person that reviews all the apps, but they don't restrict the apps, they just make sure they do what they say they're going to do, they don't do anything wrong, and then they release them. You might know Adora on Twitter, and she's like the person that looks at every app and sees it. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they just make sure it doesn't do anything nefarious. It doesn't have any offensive content, and then that's it. You can release browsers. You can release, whatever you want. And then if there's anything else you want, it's in the homebrew side, or you can do themes, and you can have customizations and patches and things to run over on top of it all. And the WebOS internals team does an awesome job with all of that as well. So there's kind of a collective community, and it all works really well together, as opposed to Android, where there's all these devices, all these different. It seems like it's just so jumbled, and there's just a big cluster F, or whatever you want to call it, of devices, and it stresses me out. Anyways, just want to hear your thoughts on that. Sorry it's a long-winded message. I appreciate all you guys do. I listen to podcasts every week, along with all the other smartphone expert podcasts, and I'm looking forward to what Android has in store for, or what Google has in store for Android in the future, and especially for what HP does. So thanks a lot, guys.
That is a really, really long question.
Well, he had three really good questions.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to play the whole thing, because I thought it was really, really good. Which part you want to start with?
Well, I think, you know, the most important question to him was the way Adora approves apps. Why can't Google do something like that? We're dealing with almost 200,000 compared to 4,800 apps.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
And I don't know how – her name is Lisa Brewster. I actually met her. I've had dinner with her. Very, very nice woman. I'm just – you know, I'm not sure exactly how much, you know, they go through the apps. You know, I know she looks at them, and she showed me a couple that she wasn't approving, but were very entertaining, shall I say. But yeah, no, it's apples and oranges in regards to the size of the app stores. Not that size matters, but it does when you're talking about, Apple, you know, lets bad apples through sometimes.
Sure.
And it happens. Oh, you're so, you have,
That pumpkin app that
right, you know,
stole something or did something.
Or, you know, the Shaking Baby app. I mean, it happens, yeah. Right? They're not going to catch them all. There's so many. But I think, and we've talked about this before, I would like to see Google maybe do a little more, you know, when these virus apps got through, you know, a few weeks ago, a month ago. I mean, that was really bad. And you can't let that keep happening. But at the same time, I hear a lot of developers say, I was talking to somebody last week who said, yeah, you know, we're still waiting on our iPhone app to be approved. The Android one will be up in an hour. You know, and they like that. So, I mean, there's got to be a happy medium, but it sure as hell isn't easy. And I don't envy anyone who has that job.
Well, I think they should just make a category in the market for apps that have been approved and tell the developers, yeah, we'll bless your app. It's going to be a month.
Yeah, but, you know, that's going to hurt the consumers, I think.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the hacking? I'm jealous of the whole homebrew community at Precentral. You know, it's amazing. And the Palm community has always been incredible. I mean, I first got into this, you know, reading Trio Central and then WM Experts when it started up. And just, it the community is just amazing. And we share a lot of that with Android, I think. But seeing what they've done with Homebrew, and just not that it's easy, but how well they've done it. And I think a lot of that helps with the platform, right? Because it's all basic. If you can write a web page, you can, you know, write a web OS app. And that's overly simplified, but not gratefully so. It's amazing stuff. I don't think Android's going to be that easy. It's a totally different just train of thought. It's a whole other community. It's a whole other ecosystem. It's
WebOS
way of thinking.
Adopted it. They like it, and you know they recognize that it's helping the platform and making it better. So they embraced it and let everybody go ahead, and they actually assist in that. So. It makes it better if you're a Palm user, because you have so much more to go ahead and choose from. You have all these, you know, Homebrew applications to go ahead and choose from, and you have, you know, a great developer community that will actually help you and assist you with, you know, making the applications and so on. And you know, the Android community has sort of the same philosophy, but the only difference there is that it's not totally embraced by Google. They don't have the support of Google behind it. You know, the support is there amongst the community, but it's not there from Google. Like, Google's not going out and telling you, you know, go ahead and root your phone or anything like that.
Well, yes, they are. They have said that. Andy Rubin has stood on, or I don't know if it was Andy Rubin. I don't want to say names. Somebody stood up and, you know, remember when he was ranting about open and bootloaders and, you know, where devices should be open. So, you know, Google did come out and say that. I, you know, don't think that they pushed the agenda, but they said it.
Good point.
So, open is good. Lisa Brewster rocks.
Well, Phil, there's one more thing I want to say here that mm-hmm. nobody seems to, and I was talking with it, you know, with you a little bit about it last night, I think. There is Android, and then there is Sense. And then there is MotoBlur, and then there is TouchWiz. When Samsung makes a phone and they put TouchWiz on it, we still say it's an Android phone. That comes back to the open source thing. Somebody from Samsung downloaded Android, changed it and made it their own and put it on their phones and they sell it. We cannot say that the two are the same. There's only two phones that run Android that are popular, that are, you know, still supported, and they're both the Nexus devices. You look, even, you know, the LG Optimus series, they're mostly stock, or the G2, they're mostly stock, but they have been touched by manufacturers and changed. We really need to, think about that when we say Homebrew. You go to, you know, a popular development forum and look at, you know, the Fascinate is a really good phone. A lot of people love it. They're doing a lot of great stuff with it. Then switch over and look at the Nexus forums. You know, not as popular. They're doing a lot of great stuff, but they're doing some really different, insane stuff because it's a more open phone.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine, and I don't want to, like, just wax poetic about WebOS the rest of the night, but can you imagine what a difference it would be if they hadn't screwed up on the hardware? Like, if they had proper, really good hardware at launch and hadn't taken 6 months to get it out, and if they followed up with just more really good hardware, I think it'd be a totally different conversation.
Yeah.
I think so, because, you know, I could love WebOS, but it left me stuck in the rain too many cards 3 times in a row while I was trying to make a phone call. Yeah. So after that, you know, and that's because it was a Sprint pre and it did not have the memory it needs to run.
We love, you know, our pals at PreCentral. We love our WebOS friends. Come on over to Android, though.
Oh, man, that Stingray phone looks pretty crazy.
Yeah, actually it does.
That looks all right, like let's do a couple that should have been launched with.
Let's do a couple emails. Steven writes, "Hey, gang, I'm the proud owner and first adopter of the 4G LTE Thunderbolt. Of course, I also invested in a spare battery and a desktop charger." Okay, several
smart
batteries.
Man.
"Can't miss the podcast. So when doing the battery charge, is it okay to pull the battery, or should I shut down the phone and then pull it?" I don't think I've ever thought about that.
That's a good question, isn't it?
I've always
just yanked the sucker out.
Yeah.
And so do I, but you know what? If something's running that isn't finished, it's not going to get saved if we just yank our batteries.
Sure.
So I guess it would depend on what you get.
Do you end up with like 2 gigabytes of dump files somewhere?
No, just do that? No, it just wipes the memory. It doesn't. At least I've never seen it. I don't think Android writes anything to a temp file if you abort it.
That's kind of one thing that I am cautious of, though, to make sure that I'm not running something important during that time. Like, you know, I've learned enough from my experiences using Windows computers. You know, if you just shut them down, you're just going to lose some stuff. So
right.
I don't leave anything running during that time, but I just pull it out.
Yeah, so do I. You know, I've never thought about it until right now. And I do it if I need to restart the phone or swap a battery. I just crack the back and yank it out.
You're totally going to think about it now every time you do it.
Yes, I am. Oh, God, what's going on in the background? Unfreeze, unfreeze. And now I'm going to be all paranoid.
All right, Mickey, you take the next one.
All right, Chris writes, I have a Samsung Galaxy S over here in the UK. I like the phone, but it just has one flaw, which really bugs me. It does not support 64 gig cards. Currently, no phone does. Have you heard of any phones that will support the large SD cards, I think he means. Nope. 32 is the highest I've heard of.
Yeah, me too. And so, even now, they're just starting to be compatible.
Yeah, that's really true. There's how many vendors are making 64 gig cards right now? I mean,
MicroSD, not many, and they can't be cheap yet. So.
Yeah, I guess just hang on. They'll come.
Yeah, I would imagine once the cards get popular, then the support will crop up.
We first saw some of the first 32 gig cards at CES 2010. So, what that has to do with now, I don't know. All right, last one. Who's doing it?
Is it Chelsea?
Yes.
Chelsea writes, I need help. I don't understand what a QHD display is. The term has been thrown around a lot recently, but nobody elaborates on what it is beyond saying it's amazing. Is it the glass, like Gorilla Glass or AMOLED, or is it the internals? And which is better in sunlight?
I used to get yelled at this every WM Experts podcast because I can't remember screen resolutions at all. And we just mix them up and people, you should know this. Well, that's why we write them down, so I don't have to memorize them. But I'm going to test you guys and see who can pull up web pages the quickest. Oh, Mickey wins.
QHD is 960 by 540.
But only if it's at 16.9.
Oh, only if it's at 16.9, yep. Correct.
All right, so we're talking screen resolution, or the number of each individual little dot on the screen is a pixel, right? And so we're talking, most phones right now are WVGA, or 480 by 800. So you have 800 pixels long and 480 pixels deep or wide or whichever way you're holding the phone. So that's kind of your normal one. You got the smaller ones, HVGA and QVGA, so that's half VGA and quarter VGA. That's where you get those from, 480 by 320 or 320 by 240. I would never, ever recommend a phone that's below 320 by 480 now. And that's like the bare minimum.
No.
I would really almost not recommend that to anybody. And I think any phone we've reviewed that has that, it's the first thing you notice. It's a big, big difference. QHD is nice, isn't it? The Atrix has that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was nice.
It's what I'm using right now is the Atrix.
Yeah. Tablets have higher resolutions, but the screens are also larger. So that's when you get into things, when you hear about pixel density, that's what we're talking about. The number of pixels crammed in, pixels per inch, basically. So the number of pixels crammed into a space. That's why with the iPhone and the Retina display, you have more pixels crammed into a smaller space. The screen size hasn't changed since the original iPhone. It's still, what, 3.4 inches? 3.5. But they're cramming in more pixels now. And then it starts to get confusing. You have pixels, and then you have subpixels. And that's a new thing in some of the new phones as well, including some of the ones that are coming out right now. The new LG stuff all have more subpixels. I think instead of 8, they have 12, or is it 6 to 12?
Yeah, and then you have that super duper AMOLED 2 Junior is going to have, like, what, 12 super, or something?
Super AMOLED Plus. That's what that is. And then on top of that, so you have AMOLED, you have Super AMOLED, you have Super LCD or SLCD, you have LCD, just, you know, TFT LCD. I don't think they make a big as difference as they used to, and I'm still perfectly fine on an LCD screen. You know, like the Evo, like the Thunderbolt. AMOLED is nice. Super AMOLED is nice. You talk about having reflective problems outside, and you certainly do. But at the same time, I can't use a Zoom outside in the sunlight, right? It's just impossible.
Right.
So
you can't use the Zoom indoors without seeing yourself in it.
That's true, too.
I just can't wait for the day when I can get a WHUXGA screen.
Oh, my God. That'll be wonderful. I know. It's insane.
Oh, WHGU, that would be what, 25, 60?
WHUXGA, 7680 by 4800.
Jeez, on a 4-inch screen.
And remember the quad-core chips that are coming out in a couple months now? They will output at a higher resolution than a high-definition television can handle.
Jeez.
Yeah, they put out, I think it's WUXGA without the H. 1920 by something.
Which one? WUXGA?
I think that's what the new Tegra quad core that they were talking about puts out.
Yowza.
You know, that's nice and all, but what are you going to do with it? We just bought a new TV and it's 1080p TV. I can't tell the difference from the old 720p TV.
And on that big, giant act of nerdery, I think I'm going to call it.
That's a wrap.
My brain hurts after that.
Yeah, the Andy Rubin stuff kind of toasted my head.
Sorry.
It's okay, Jerry. Well, I don't blame you.
Okay. Mickey, take us home.
If you have any questions or comments for us, you can send us an email to podcast@androidcentral.com or give us a call. Leave a voicemail at 888-468-6158. Type in extension 222. You can follow all of us on Twitter. The site Android Central can be found at Android Central. Phil is at Phil Nickinson. I am at TCPJ_Mickey. Jerry is at GB Hill. And Blaze, i.e. Blaze, is at Blaze. BLA1ZE. That's Chris. You can also find the entire list of writers over at androidcentral.com. The entire site and the podcast brought to you by the Android Central Store, found at store.androidcentral.com. You can place your order by calling 888-468-6158.
If you haven't noticed, we've been reviewing the hell out of some cases lately because we finally have a whole bunch of really good stuff in. A whole bunch of good stuff. So go buy it. My baby needs a new pair of shoes.
Please. There you go.
And Thunderbolt owners, you can buy some batteries. Lots of them.
Yeah.
Buy two.
Mickey, Jerry, Chris, thank you. Chat room, thank you guys.
Pleasure as always.
Be back live again next week. 9 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific,
6 o'clock Mountain,
6 o'clock Pacific, 9, yep. 8, 7, 6. Yeah. 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock. Hawaii, no. Is there anything between Pacific and Hawaii time? Alaska.
It would be Alaska.
Alaska, yeah.
10 o'clock Atlantic.
Oh, that's right, because Chris is way over in, you're hanging off into the ocean there.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. So we'll see you guys again next week. Ciao.
Right on.
Later on, people.